You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are. Welcome to another glorious episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. We're recording this in August, everyone. I know it's September now that you're listening to it. But I need to take you on the journey that the Wendell and I are on. We're half really chilled because we've had a bit of time off and we might have a bit more coming up, but half having nervous breakdowns because everybody else is on holiday and we're having to do all their work. And we've had to do that thing where you earn your holiday by working 97-hour days before you go and 97-hour days when you come back. But Wend, I want you to update us on what happened to you in Cornish, Cornwall, because you had a pretty epic life experience that doesn't happen very often. Go on.
We did have quite an epic life experience. Well, there was an unepic life experience that is 10 hours on the M5 to get there. But then we were quietly stand-up paddleboarding our way around a little beach called Towan on the Roslyn Peninsula. And there were seals. And we thought, oh, aren't they lovely? And then they kind of came up to the sup and they started playing with it. And they started tapping the fin, and basically they followed us all the way back to the beach. And it was quite mad to be so close to seals. So it was lovely.
I think it's very magical. Would you call yourself a seal whisperer now, do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As anyone who knows me knows, I don't ever whisper, let alone to seals.
You gave me an impression earlier of the noise the seals were making when they were communicating with you. And I think the Sweats Not Tears listeners need to hear it, please.
Hold on. It was like a sound.
Okay, thank you very much for that. So everyone, if you don't get up close and personal with the seal, that's what you're missing out on. Now, I think we should ask today's guest whether he's ever drawn a seal, because today's guest is none other than children's illustrator extraordinaire and sanity saver in lockdown, thanks to his kids' drawing videos on YouTube. Rob Biddulph, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I have drawn a seal, actually. I have a seal, one of my very first book, in fact, Blown Away. There's a seal character in it. His name's Wilbur. He wears a little red bandana with white polka dots. I don't know if any of the seals that you saw, Wendy, were wearing bandanas, but mine
does.
There
was the polka dots, but none of the bandanas. But my daughter called the seal Dave, actually. So will be very thrilled.
After our producer, there you go. Are seals easy to draw, Rob?
Do you know what? They're pretty easy. Yeah, they're not too bad. They're not like, you know, horses or something like that, which are much, much trickier.
Why are horses hard?
I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I've always found horses hard. I can do a horse standing still. I'm not bad at that. But as soon as it's the walking thing, it's the opposing legs. I don't know which one goes where. And they always just look all over the shop.
Can we just quantify your not bad versus my not bad? And already,
yeah.
Your not bad still looks like a horse.
Yeah. Well, you know, my mantra is everybody can draw, Wendy. So, you know, I think, you know, it's, you know, art is subjective, isn't it? It's not a binary thing. There is no right or wrong answer. So who's to say that your interpretation of a horse is any better or worse than mine?
I like you.
That's Rob, nice. I've seen her drawings and they're not great.
The only thing I'm more shit at than drawing is singing. It's
official. But that's coming at the end. Don't spoil it, Wendy.
Okay, sorry. Right, Rob, tell us about your girls. Yeah. How old are they? You've got three girls?
Three girls, yeah. They're frighteningly old now. So the oldest one is 20, she's just turned 24. So she's gone. She's out. She's been away, university, she's been back. Now she's just gone again.
Gone.
Done. See you later. And then the middle one is 16. So it's, just done her GCSEs.
Did she get the results today?
She did. Yeah, she's got
happy,
them today.
Happy, sad, okay, where
yes,
are we?
Happy, we're happy, we're happy. There's one she's not particularly happy about. In fact, we're going to query it. But she's happy. I mean, do you know what, GCSE, it's all about getting to the next stage, isn't it? As long as she can get in to do her A-levels, which she has done easily. I mean, there was never any doubt about that. But she's happy. She's done really well. We're very, very proud of her. So, yes.
Is she doing A-level art, dare I ask?
She's not, actually.
Oh, she's not. Rob, she's not really. She's let the side down, isn't she?
She's letting the side down. The oldest one did. The oldest one is, in fact, she's a graphic designer now.
So
she
really
went to art college and everything. She, like, you know, can you say you've got a favourite child? I don't know. Probably not meant to say that. But no, she's not the middle one, though, not particularly into art. She is art. She's doing drama, so she's creative. She channels her creativity in another down another route. She's a thesp. And then the youngest is, right, I'm going to say 12. I think she's 12. And Poppy, she's the youngest one. So, yeah, they're all, we've got quite a spread of ages.
Well, see, but, we often talk to people at the toddler coalface, but you're at the teenage coalface, man. Bad times.
I'm at the teenage coalface, yeah, I am.
Yeah, and have you become like a hormonal teenage girl whisperer? If Wendy's a seal whisperer, are you a hormonal teenage whisperer?
I think I'm all, you know, touch wood. We've had, with the oldest two, we've had a fairly easy ride of it. So we'll see what happens with the youngest as she hits her teenage years.
What are your tips and tricks?
Oh my gosh. I mean,
don't breathe, don't look at them, don't talk to them. Is that the...
different rooms, preferably different buildings. I'm out here in my little studio at the end of the garden, and that seems to work really, really well.
So, okay. Yeah, listeners, you can't see, but the dog has come with him to get away from the teenagers.
It's a very well-behaved dog. Is the dog a girl as well? Are you just surrounded by women?
No, the dog is, the dog Ringo is a boy, and that was kind of a deal breaker, I must admit. So I was so outnumbered.
Our dog is a boy too, for the same reason.
Oh, really?
We're a two-girl family, and my husband said if the dog didn't have balls, he wasn't getting one.
Well, yeah, we didn't. Yeah, it wasn't quite put it like that, but yeah, you know, it's the same thing.
Now, most of us survived lockdown because of you. Tell us about your lockdown.
Yeah, I had a very strange lockdown. It's been, I would say, the busiest 18 months of my entire life. Because... Yeah, so basically what happened was, right at the beginning, just before the schools closed, I was sitting there, it was a Sunday evening, I was sitting there watching the news with my wife, and they were saying, right, I think we're going to close the schools in about a week's time. And I, being a father of three girls and having spent many, you know, summer holidays trying to think of things for them to do when it's, you know, raining outside, I thought... Right, I think I might be able to help. I was mainly thinking of the parents, really. I thought I might be able to help parents out. Because what I do at my... So the thing is, when you sign a book contract, lots of authors... Nobody told me this before I signed my book contract. But about a week later, you get called into your publisher's office and they say, right, you've got to develop an act. You're going out on the road. You're going on stage. And I was like, what? Hang on. I'm the guy who sits in the shed at the end of the garden drawing and not talking
actually.
To anyone.
Yeah.
I just do drawing. I wasn't in the school plays. I did the posters for the school plays. And they said, right, now you've got to develop an act. You're going out on the road. And within about, you know, 3 months of my book coming out, I found myself, you know, on stage at the Royal Festival Hall in front of like hundreds of kids talking
about
terrifying. Books. It's quite scary. It's quite scary. And there's lots of authors. Actually, it turns out I really like it. And I think I'm quite good at it because I must be some kind of massive show off or something. But, I found out quite early on that if I stood on stage and drew for the kids think drawing is a superpower. They really do. So if they see that you can draw, you kind of got them in the palm of your hand. So that's what I used to do. I used to do these draw along things on stage, and I still do. I've done them the whole way through my
like
author,
Tony
my book
Hart
career.
For the next gen, basically.
Much like Tony Hart.
Well, at least you didn't say the other one, Annie. I thought you were going to say
the other
one. I
was being careful not to mention
you.
The other person.
Thank you
who's
for
a
that.
Bit creepy.
Thank you for that. I've had yes. That is a tricky one. So yeah, I thought right. What if I just film myself doing what I do on stage, all my book events. I've been doing it for years. I was pretty good at doing these step-by-step. So what I do step-by-step drawings. I break a drawing down into little bite-sized pieces. I do a bit on the stage. Usually the kids will draw a little bit, then I'll draw some more, they'll draw, and everyone ends up with the drawing. They're really
Do you provide
with, you
the
know.
Pens and paper, or do you tell them to bring their own?
I don't, usually because it's the venue. It'll be the venue that does that stuff.
Sorry, I just need to know the details.
Her attention to detail never fails to amaze me.
This is good. I mean, it is actually, whenever I turn up at a venue, it's the first question I ask. It's like, you have got the pens and pencils, right?
The reason I'm asking is, if my son ever found himself in the same room as you, which is like his dream, and he didn't have his pen and paper with him, I think he would have a nervous breakdown.
Well, I do carry some spares. I do carry some spares,
good.
So your son would
better.
Be fine. I've got him covered.
Phew.
I've got him covered. Yeah. So I do these little step-by-step drawings. So I thought, right, yeah, I'll film myself doing them and I'll stick them up online. And then that way parents can, you know, stick the kids in front of YouTube with a pen and a pencil, and it might keep them out of their hair for half an hour or so. So I had the idea on the Sunday. Recorded the first one on the Monday, put it up on YouTube on the Tuesday, and I'm not joking, I was on like news at 10 on the Wednesday night. It was crazy how many people were, I mean, unbelievable. You know, my phone just did not stop, believe me.
It went stratospheric, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
It was so popular so quickly. And so it kind of carried on from there. So I initially was doing in the first lockdown when it was all you know, everywhere. It was such a sort of scary and in lots of ways kind of a bleak time, wasn't it? So I was doing two videos a week. And I think what happened was my social media feeds, because what I would do, the kids would send me pictures of them holding their drawings and I'd repost these pictures. And I think my social media feed became a little kind of oasis of sort of joyous pictures of happy kids with their pictures of dinosaurs. In this sort of desert of bleakness and sort of, you know, anxiety. And it sort of it was a self-perpetuating thing, because the more people that saw that, the more people that joined in with the video. So it just got more and more popular. So, yeah, I was doing two a week at the beginning, and then I sort of went down to one a week once things started sort of to calm down a little bit. But, at the time of recording, I'm about to post my 100th video, so
Your centenary. Woo!
It's my centenary.
I think one of the things that was really magical about it, so my son loves drawing and he got really into the video straight away, and he and his best friend obviously couldn't see each other because we weren't supposed to mingle or anything, so what they used to do was FaceTime each other and follow the video together. So I actually think it became quite a nice connector of people, not just a way for someone to entertain themselves on their own.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of people telling me that was happening. In fact, I was getting sent, I'd get sent pictures from, you know, pan-generational pictures, you know, little boy, his dad and his granddad all holding the same drawing that they'd done. And it was lovely to see. So, yeah, I think that happened a lot. And, you know, at a time when, as you say, you know, people couldn't connect physically, it was a really nice thing to bring them together across the internet.
Well, and I think any kind of creative outlet is so good for people's mental health as well. Like, is that one of the benefits for you? Do you feel very zen when you're drawing?
I definitely do. You sort of go into a different place, because my job's a funny one, because I write the stories and I illustrate them, and that's fairly unusual in the children's book world. Usually you have somebody who writes the text, somebody else does the illustrations, but I'm just greedy. I like to do everything. And so when I'm in drawing mode, I sort of go into sort of like, yeah, a bit of like a, it is like you go into a bit of a zen like state really. And I don't really think about it when I'm doing it. I just sort of just draw, and then at the end of it there's a picture in front of me. So it definitely is quite calming. I think drawing, you know, is therapeutic. It's great for mental health, mindfulness, well-being. Loads of benefits. I think it improves your focus. It can help lengthen your attention span. It's really good for problem solving, drawing, I think.
Because you're kind of half concentrating on the drawing and half mulling over what else is going on in your head.
What to kind of do next. Yeah, and it is about problem solving drawing, you know. And especially when you do my drawings, as I said, they're kind of step by step. So I think the kids that have done them with me all the way through, they can see how you can build. Because if I showed you the drawing, I don't know, of a steam train, right? You might look at it and think, particularly you, Wendy, who have said you don't think you're very good at drawing.
Wendy's become the textbook reference for someone who's bad at art. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Oh, I accept that. It's cool.
Yeah. So Wendy might look at my steam train and think, I've got absolutely no chance. But once, you know, you break it down into kind of manageable, as I said, bite-sized pieces, and you build it up and you take your time doing it, you know, you end up with this thing that you're really, really proud of. And I think lots of kids have kind of, you can take that through to other aspects of life as well.
And learning. So a story is like, is essentially a sum of some parts, isn't it? And a maths problem, you just break down into parts. That's a really good way of,
you're just picking all the things I'm bad at. I'm bad at maths.
I think you can write quite a good story, Wend.
I can write a story. Give me credit for that one. Yeah, okay, fine.
I want to know how old you were when you realised drawing was something you could do better than, like, your mates.
I was quite young. My mum paints. My mum's a really talented artist, and so I think when we were kids, there was always paper and pens and paints and things around the house. And back in those days, you know, we didn't have iPads and mobile phones and the internet and stuff. So, you know, I think I spent a lot of my time drawing. And I remember being in reception. So, what are you in reception? You're about four, aren't you? In reception.
Four,
and I remember I won a competition at my school, in the whole primary school. It was a drawing competition. I drew a picture of some kids dancing around a maypole and I won the competition. And I think from that moment on, I was kind of pegged as the arty kid at school. So pretty much my whole life, I've always been, that's been the label that's been kind of applied to me. So I always did, you know, I always drew the posters for the school plays and, you know, all that sort of thing, caricatures of my teachers and my friends. And so, yeah, I think I knew quite early on. My mum says she could tell straight away as soon as I picked up a pencil that, you know, what was in my head would appear on the page. You know, I think that's what it is, isn't it? It's just translating what's here to your hand.
Well, we wouldn't know because it doesn't really happen for us in that way, does it, Wend?
So if there are parents listening who've got a hunch their kids are great at drawing, how do they encourage it? Is it a thing of like art classes? Is there special things they should buy? How do you encourage them to get better at what you think they're good at?
I just think encouraging them to do it all the time. So yeah, make sure you've always got pencils and paper handy. I don't think you need any fancy art equipment, really. You might want a set of coloured pencils or something like that. But I think being an example to your kids yourself is really good. I mean, we were talking earlier about drawing together with children. I think that's a really powerful thing to do. So if your child sees you drawing and you're not self-conscious about your drawing and you just draw, you know, with abandon and enthusiasm and just laugh at it. If you make a mistake, don't screw your piece of paper up and throw it away. Just keep on going and laugh about it. I think that's really, really important. And also display your children's artwork. Stick it up on the fridge, put it in a frame, have some frames that you can kind of rotate on the wall, you know, and put your children's artwork up on the wall, because, you know, art is made to be seen. And I think for a child, the fact that a grown-up sees their picture as something worthy of a place on the wall, you know, maybe even in a frame, can be hugely important. It can have a massive impact on, you know, their feelings of self-worth and, you know, and their sense of place within the family unit too. And it can really give their confidence a huge boost, and that's what drawing's all about. It's all about confidence and positive reinforcement and that kind of thing. And I think, as I said, you know, once you do that, that can percolate down into other areas of their lives too, and they can really, you know, thrive from a creative point of view.
That's a really good point. Now, we previously have interviewed Jeff Kinney, Mr. Wimperkid Man, and he told us he has a really set process for creating his books, including doing them in churchyards because he finds them very quiet and it's the only place he can get away from his own kids. Do you have a similar set strategy, or are you a bit more freewheeling, freestyling?
I am a very process driven person, you know. I do tend to do things exactly the same way for every single book. It's slightly different with me than it is for Jeff, because as I said I also illustrate the books as well. So when I'm the illustration part, I have to be here out here in my studio, you know, with all my equipment and all that kind of thing, because it's not mobile, unfortunately. But when I'm writing, I've always written at least a section of every book that I've written in the British Library, in the cafe at the British Library. I have
How
to go there.
Lovely.
And that's mainly because when I first started this, I was working at the Guardian, working at the Observer, actually.
Yes.
And it's just around the corner. So in my lunch hour, I would go there and type away. And that has now become a bit of a kind of a lucky mascot for me. So I always have to write a bit of my book there. But apart from that, just sort of local cafes I go out and about. When I'm writing, I try and go out and about because it's less distracting. I've got too many children, as we've already mentioned, and they can be they can get in the way.
So does the writing always come first, or do you which draw order? Someone? Because I was going to ask you who's your favourite character, but I'll come back to that because I want to know, do you draw someone or something and think, I need to write a book about this person? Or do you have the idea for the story and then illustrate?
Well, the idea comes first usually, but the idea is can be just like, you know, a sentence, you know, so it might be a bear loses his growl, or it might be a sausage dog doesn't fit in with all the other sausage dogs, or it might be a penguin gets blown away when he's flying his kite.
Look, she cries easily, okay? Stop.
Are they always sad? Does it always have to be sad?
Yeah, they usually start. Well, you have to have a story arc, don't you? You have to have something that goes wrong that you can then kind of put right. So, yeah. Okay. They usually start off with a slightly sad premise. But then what happens with me is I will usually draw the protagonist. So I'll draw the lead character quite early on. So I've got a picture in my head of who's going to be, you know, taking us through the story. But then it sort of happens a bit at the same time, because I will plot out a very rough story arc, you know, right in words. And then I will start sketching the pages quite early on. And I'll get a kind of idea of the pacing from a visual point of view, you know, just drawing thumbnails in my sketchbook. And at the same time, sort of working up other character, kind of the look and feel of other characters. And then I usually go away and spend a good deal of time with the writing, because I write in rhyme. And it's hard to write in rhyme and make the rhyme work. There's nothing wrong with a rhyme that doesn't quite flow, or, you know, you have to speed up a bit to make it kind of work. So the rhyme is very, very tough. So these books can take me 6 months to write. You know, they take 5 minutes to read, but they can often take me 6 months to get right. Because you find that if you write, you get to a point in the story and you can't get a rhyme to work. You have to go right back to the beginning to undo that in order to make a rhyme work up here, to try and think of something to rhyme with orange or something, you know. And so it's a very... I find it a tricky process to get the rhyme right, with my picture books at least, you know. And then the last bit is the fun bit. That's the actual finished artwork. And that's the bit that I find the easiest bit. And I'll spend, you know, a month, 2 months just drawing pictures of penguins. And it's great. And I can listen to podcasts like yours while I'm drawing, you know, because I don't really have, you know, when I'm writing, I can't really have any external kind of... But when I'm drawing, it's great. I can listen to music and listen to podcasts, listen to audiobooks, whatever. And it's that's the really fun part for me. So yeah.
And do you have a favourite? Is it like, you've already told us you have a favourite child. So do you have a favourite book character?
Yeah, I have a favourite
character.
I don't know. I will always be very... So my first book was the one about the penguin and the kite, which is called Blown Away. I really like Penguin Blue, who's the lead character in that book. I'll always be very fond of, because he's the one who got my book career underway, I guess. And it took me a long time to get published. You know, it took me 4 years of trying very hard to get published, you know, sending emails from my Observer email account, using everything in my arsenal, you know. And I got very close very early on. I got an agent straight away. I got in the room with pretty much all of the publishers in London straight away, but I just couldn't quite get a deal over the line because it's so competitive. I had no idea how many people want to write and illustrate kids' books. And so when it finally happened, it was an amazing moment. And so I think I'll always be very fond of Penguin Blue for that reason. But I also, my most popular book, I would say, my most popular picture book is Odd Dog Out, which is the one about the sausage dog who doesn't fit in with all the other sausage dogs. And that's the one that's got the biggest response from readers. So I'm very fond of her too.
I always think of you as Mr. Sausage Dog Man.
Oh, that's nice. That's sorry, that's nice your thing nice. To be thought of.
I'm not going to ask what she always thinks of me as.
The seal whisperer.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. At this point, we normally ask our guest, what's next? Can you tell us? Is there a new character on the horizon?
Well, I can. Yeah, the next thing for me, or maybe even by the time this podcast airs, this book might already be out. But I've written my first novel. So children's novel, so, you know, Harry Potter age, that's what I always say. And it's called Peanut Jones and the Illustrated City. And that's publishing with Macmillan right at the beginning of September. And I am super excited about it. And that's it feels like I'm a new world, you know, because it's so different. Everything up until now has been a picture book, an illustrated picture book for, you know, key stage one kids. And this one, yeah, for slightly older kids. And it's a whole new world for me.
But tell us, have pictures in as well, please.
It is. It's different. I would say it's different to the vast majority of books in this middle grade bracket, in that pretty much every single page has got an illustration on it. There's over 200 illustrations in this book, and it almost killed me. I have to say, it was like, it seemed like a good idea. And then I realized I've written 50,000 words. And it's a labor of love, and it's a first in a trilogy. So I've got to do it, and I've got to do it twice more.
My son is going to be so excited.
Yeah, I am really, I don't know if I've ever been more proud of anything I've made, actually. It's been, the people who've seen preview copies have given me such amazing feedback. There's all sorts of exciting stuff happening around the book as well. Most of which I can't tell you about, unfortunately. But
might it involve us coming to see you? Might there be some little appearances we might?
Oh, there's definitely, I can tell you about those. Yeah, I'm doing lots of live events, because that's all kicking in again this autumn, actually. Because obviously we haven't been doing those for 18 months or so. But yeah, I'm doing... Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting. So all the festivals are, I'm basically at all the festivals, Cheltenham, Bath, Henley, I can't even think of them all, but I'm at, you name a literary festival, I'm probably at it. And that'll be so nice to actually see my readers in the flesh. Yeah. I've been doing loads of Zoom bits and pieces, and that's great too. It's been great that we can do that, but it's not the same as meeting the kids in person. And so, I am super, super excited that's all kicking off again.
Great. So at the end of our podcast, we have three questions that we ask every guest, and they're not the easiest of questions.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
First up, how do you want to be remembered by your kids?
Oh, by my kids. Well, hopefully as someone they like. That would be good.
that would be nice.
They quite like.
Quite a good little baseline there.
Yeah, someone that when I say, you know, I'm going to come over to yours this Christmas, they don't sort of roll their eyes and try and think of it, and, you know, suddenly book a holiday to, you know, St. Lucia or something. That would be the best.
Or have that terrible phone call behind your back that goes, look, can you have him? Can you have him?
It's your turn. I had him last year. Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. It's coming to us all, guys. That is coming to us all.
Don't, Wendy.
It is.
Stop.
Oh God, she's gonna cry again. Carry on.
I am always cry at the end. Sorry, carry on. Oh, it's me, actually. Yeah, I am asking the next one. So, Rob, what's for tea tonight, and who's cooking?
What's for tea tonight? I don't know. My wife is cooking. Recently, my wife has been doing pretty much all of the cooking. In years gone by, we've spread it pretty evenly, but because my schedule has just gone slightly crazy, I've got every single hour. I am trying to, like, you know, knock off another chapter of the next book. So she is doing all the cooking at the moment. We started doing that Gusto thing. Am I allowed to say that?
Oh, is it good? Yeah.
We're not the BBC. You can say what you like.
Oh, yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah, sorry. Other food providing services are available. It's really good. We've been doing it since beginning of lockdown, actually. In fact, we signed up for it just before lockdown, and we were so thankful because, you know, all that stuff started happening in the supermarkets where you can get hold of anything. And we were getting as delivered to us every week, and so we've been doing it for over, you know, 18 months now. It was great. It's really great, and far less wastage.
Do you have it like once a week, or do you have it every day? Like, how does it work?
We have it four meals a week. So,
oh wow,
pretty much
nice. And but then, what do you eat on the other nights? Beans on toast.
We will we'll actually go off piste and do something, you know, ourselves from scratch, or we get a takeaway. No, yeah, we do get a takeaway sometimes, or we'll go out. But yeah, it feels like it's proper cooking. It's just that, you know, they don't chop up the onions for you or anything. They just sort of, you just have everything in one place, and it's
gathered soup together.
And also the kids are eating, the kids are eating different things because, that's always the battle. So
is it covered in batter and shaped like a fish finger or not? They are the only things.
Well, exactly.
That
yes, that's true.
Last question, Wend, over to you.
She always does this, Rob. She always makes me do the last question. We would like you to imagine that you are tucking Annie and I into bed.
In a nice way. not right, in a creepy right. way.
Okay.
And we would like you to cast your mind back to when your teenage girls were little girls and sing us your lullaby.
You want me to sing it to you now?
Hell yes. My lullaby.
Well, this is, I'm quite, right, okay. My daughters, I had to sing them six songs every night. And even now, sometimes I still do the six songs. So I mean,
right, we better hold on. I need to adjust and sort of settle down for this.
I'm not going to sing all six. The first one was always, I don't really know why, but it was always Morning Town Ride by the Seekers. Do you know that?
No.
Right, okay. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Train whistle blowing, do you know it? Makes a sleepy noise. Underneath the blankets go all the girls and boys. Rockin', rollin', riding out along the bay. Yeah, all bound for Morning Town, many miles away. There you go.
God, you can sing as well as draw, Rob.
I know.
Could be sing with Rob next time.
Sing with Rob, yeah, that's coming soon.
That's a lot of singing every night. I'm impressed.
A lot of singing every single night and stories, usually two or three stories as well. So, yeah, bedtime, it's a big deal in our house. Big deal.
Okay, can I just ask one thing? Can you not tell my kids ever that yours got six songs? Because then you're setting me up for a massive fall.
I'm going to put it on Twitter later. I'm going to say, parents, up your game. You need to do at least six songs every night. Come on.
The Net Mums Forum would go ballistic.
Yeah, you're going to get sued for like mums and dads everywhere losing their voices.
Yes. Or losing their shit.
It's been an absolute delight talking to you. Thank you. I think we've made mums, dads and kids jealous everywhere that we got to spend some time with you. Thank you for saving us all in lockdown.
Yes.
Like, thank you. Yeah, Joe Wicks and you, I think, basically should get some kind of sainthood.
Me and Joe. Oh, well, thank you for having me, guys. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. And, you know, Wendy, keep that pencil sharp and keep on drawing.
I'll keep trying.
There's hope for you. There's hope for you yet, I promise.
And good luck with Peanut Jones. We can't wait to meet
Peanut. Thank you, Annie. Thank you
and
so
I
much.
Will. I'll be that one. I'll send you a picture of me smiling when I've finally done one that I think is worthy. Yes.
Do it.
I'll nag her. Right, have a great day, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Bye.